Brad, it occurred to me the other day because I got to sleep in, which is that rarest of most beautiful things, that parenting is kind of a 10 to 15 year window where you don't get to sleep in anymore.
No, you're absolutely right.
It's just kind of gone. It's gone. It's a beautiful aspect of your life that's just gone. You're like, well, I guess it's 5:30. I guess I'll get up now.
Because your kids are up going, hey, let's do this, let's do that, let's make a snowman, let's play a game. And you're like, oh, let's play sleep in.
It's like a Dennis the Menace cartoon. They're like poking you in the eyeball, like, hey, get up. Hey, get up.
Yeah, they've got no sense of propriety whatsoever.
Yeah.
They'll poke you right in the eye. Yeah, although I can tell you this, Dave, it does get better. My kids are a little older than your kids. I've got a 16-year-old and a young guy that's going to be 13 in a couple weeks.
Oh, you're in the growth spurt years.
Oh, yes. It's fantastic. This is the last day of winter break. They go back to school tomorrow. And yesterday, my 13-year-old slept in till 11:30. The 16-year-old was still in bed at 1 in the afternoon until we finally went in and literally kicked him out of the bed.
Wow, 1 o'clock. Oh, my God. Can I tell you, though, from where I'm sitting, that sounds like the promised land. Like, you're offering me a drink of water in a desert that it's going to someday in the future I'll be able to sleep until 1 again.
Yeah, I get so much done. It's not even funny because I at this point, the other part of that equation is that you will get so used to waking up at that time that if you want to sleep in, you're going to end up, your eyes are going to pop open at 6 o'clock because they're so used to being poked at that time.
It's gonna be like boing, 5 a.m. Yep. Everyone else is still sleeping. Time to get work done too. I can recognize that would be amazing.
Yeah, you all of a sudden you wake up, don't poke me, and realize you're in a room all by yourself with your wife, you know, snoring steadily by your side, you know?
The funny thing about this is that I know you're half joking, but I also know that, like, so far you've predicted a lot of my parenting stages pretty well, and so I think you're probably going to be right about this.
Yeah. And then you come to find out, like I did in the case of the 16-year-old, come to find out that one of the reasons he's sleeping until 1 is that one of his friends dared him to stay up until 4:30. The night before, and then they were playing PS4 and texting back and forth and just generally screwing around until 4:30 in the morning.
Good God. How do you parent that? Because, like, it's not like you're
going
to be like,
I was asleep.
I better go check on the kids. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was completely asleep, you know. And to be fair, he's not hurting anything. It's not a school night. You know, it's like... There's a part, and I'm sure that all parents have done this, but you get to a point where you say, it could be so much worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, so he stayed up till 4:30 playing, PS4 and texting memes back and forth to his goofball friends. There are parents right now that are dealing with so much worse than that. And as long as my thing has always been, as long as you're bringing home good grades, as long as it's not affecting your schoolwork, I'll swing with an awful lot. You get into a pick your battles kind of situation. I will happily pick another battle than that one as long as the grades are good.
Yeah, Glow and I, not at all jokingly, say we just want to raise nerds. Like that's
because
what you want. You want the sweet goofiness, but also the quiet hard work. But I think you could do far worse than to raise a sweet nerd. You know.
Yes. No. I I agree. And in a very Garrison Keillor way, I want my kids to be above average. You know, I don't want them, to be super smart, you know, because there's like a baggage that comes along with that.
Oh, yeah, it's been a curse for me, so I would advise against it. It's a hard road to walk. You don't want that for your kids. I have had a tough road with it.
I've heard stories. I wouldn't know firsthand. But yeah, I just want above average kids.
Well, on that note, my friend, I want to say Happy New Year to you and everybody else and say welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. Welcome to our first show of 2019, everybody. We're thrilled to be here. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab.
So it's January 1st here, and I thought it would be fun, Brad, to start this year. We still have to do our big 3-year, 5-year plans, which I really still want to do with you. Ugh. But I thought at best today, why don't we tackle what we're going to be doing in 2019? What are our plans? What are our actions? What are our actionable steps? Like what are our, not only what we hope to do, but I think in a more productive way for everyone is how will we keep ourselves on task? How will we keep getting there? How will we keep returning to, all right, got to get back on track kind of a mentality? So
yeah,
let's talk 2019. What are your big, first of all, big plans for the year? What are your big hopes and desires and dreams?
I've got three really big ones. One of them is to hire an assistant and to have somebody that I can put some of the, anybody can do this stuff off to so that I can get the only I can do this stuff maximized a little bit more. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So that means stuff like I've seen you do with Beth, social media, stuff like that. Some basic, you know, data management, in terms of webcomics.com and getting the new book ready and,
exactly.
And just you know, importing files into an InDesign package and there's that's the real big thing that I want to do for 2019 is hire an assistant and see if I can make that work on a weekly basis.
Well, let's drill down on what are your action steps, because maybe I can chime in a helpful way. Like, what are you going to do first? Are you going to write up a job description? Are you going to think about what salaries you can afford? How are you going to tackle this first?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The first thing I think I've got to do is write down what I think this person would be doing per week, and then take that week, break it down into how many hours and how many steps I think it's going to take, and then come up with what I think is going to be something that A, I can do affordably, and B, I can that is going to be attractive enough in terms of a pay scale that I'll be able to get somebody who's, you know, very good and going to give this their full attention. You know,
right.
As far as finding out, you know, in terms of finding a person, I'm not really sure. I part of me wants to is like, well, maybe if I tweet it, if I go the social media route, I'm going to get a bunch of people who are like maybe readers and fans and maybe want to do it for the wrong reason. You know, I don't want to get somebody who just I want to get somebody who's got the kind of a background in this and somebody who is going to want to do it at least for a year. You know, I want to get at least a year out of this person because the idea of training somebody every 3 months and going through all of that doesn't sound great to me. Right. So I want the long haul. And that means that maybe I try to troll some sites with that some of these people might be looking for work, like Craigslist and maybe Monster.com and stuff like that.
Right.
And the other part of me is very, very strong towards the idea. And for example, I'm getting an intern from University of the Arts who's going to start coming in at the end of this month. And I might try to do something like that in which I talk to a few of the UArts professors and try to find somebody that's just graduated or just graduating and maybe looking for something to supplement their income. And do it that way. Somebody who's just starting out where that extra money can make the difference for them, give them some resume material and some money in the bank, and who's going to be, you know, kind of up to the very latest. as we go along, there's so many times where I realize that I, you know, for Instagram is my go-to, where it's like, oh God, you know, I don't understand so much about it. And somebody from who's just graduated from college is going to be so much more naturally in tune to all of that stuff that they're just going to automatically bring a skill set that I'm going to find advantageous, you know?
Right, 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 right.
So that's kind of where I'm headed. What do you think? If you had to do of those three steps, social media, going to Craigslist, or approaching somebody who's recently grad from a school like University of the Arts, which one would you be leaning towards?
Well, first of all, I think your heart already knows which way to go based on the word choices that you used. I think if you stop and think about it, you know in your heart that social media is a bad choice because, like we talked about last week, that's the equivalent of going with the low-hanging fruit of hiring friends or family.
Right.
Because like your heart will tell you, oh, well, they know and like Evil Inc., they must be a good hire then. When in fact, you know that you don't want a fan or a reader working on your comic because they'll be like, what if Mismatch was able to do this? And you're like, it's not what you're here for. We're not talking future story plot points. I just need you to seal these envelopes. That's, you know.
Right, right.
And so there's a weirdness there that you don't want. I can just tell you that. So I don't think you want social media. I don't think Craigslist will get you the caliber of people that you want. Although maybe you'll find a lucky, diamond in the rough that way. But I think if you stop and think about it, the skill sets that you want, at least in part, are an awareness of and familiarity with like an Adobe suite and an awareness and a familiarity with the creative process and how that works. And so getting either a senior, a recent graduate, or a grad student who's coming out of the university that you're working with is the way to go. Also, yeah. Because once you tap into that network of professors that you know, you will immediately weed through 100 students to the 4 or 5 that are really perfect for working in a studio. Just yeah. by these people have been with them for months, and that's an amazing asset to be able to tap into, you know?
Yeah.
They've seen them respond to projects. They've seen their classroom demeanor and their demeanor out of classroom. They've seen how they handle themselves, what their comportment is. And so like use that network. That's an amazing resource. And frankly, I would tend to recommend hiring a little older rather than younger. Although mm-hmm. I would say this as a friend, since you're a first time manager, although maybe you manage people at the newspaper, I don't remember, but since you're a first time manager, you might be most relaxed with a younger employee. Mm-hmm. Although the trade-off there would be that they would be less skilled in like Adobe Suite or that kind of thing. Right. Because you might be a little stumbling at first in your management, like, well, I think if we could do the XYZ first, and then you're not gonna know how to delegate it first, in a way that you will 3 years from now. So maybe a younger employee is better because they're gonna be more forgiving, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas if you hire a 30-year-old, they're gonna be like, what job did I take? What's going on here?
And what am I getting myself into?
Right. And then the other piece of advice that I would give you as a friend is, you might think in your heart of hearts, like, I want a cartoonist or an illustrator. And I think actually it's kind of parallel to my thing about fandom is you don't necessarily want to hire someone that wants to do exactly what you want to do.
Right.
Because that can actually cause problems. You want to hire someone who has parallel skill sets or parallel interests. Maybe they're an illustrator rather than a cartoonist. Maybe they like graphic design rather than, you know, comic strip layout. But their skill set could be applied to what you want, but maybe isn't necessarily what you want. Now, I can also see the flip side being true based on personality. It might be fun to hire a cartoonist to say, like, not only will you get a paycheck, but you are going to learn firsthand how I do what I do. And my goal will be at the end of 2 years that you can go out and do your own thing, you know?
Right, right. See, that's kind of what I thought too, is that that's something I can offer is kind of almost like the old syndicated apprenticeship model, where it's like, yeah, you're going to come in and do stuff to help the business. You've got your own thing you're working on, and I can guide you and mentor you along the way. But the main thing you're going to be doing here is not necessarily cartooning. It's going to be more along the lines of grunt work, envelope stuffing, and stuff like that.
Right, right. I mean, there's also the awareness that it is still a job and there's still work to be done. And part of what they're coming in for is to do some of the work to let you do the art side of things. But like, I had a conversation with Beth when she first started with the hope saying, and because I've had a few assistants in the past, I even say to them now, in all likelihood, we'll probably part ways around 2 years, because that seems to be the point where people are like, all right, time to move on. Mm-hmm. But by the time that they move on, I want my assistants to be able to do everything that I can do. You know, yeah. That they can do the InDesign, they can work in Vector, they can work all sorts of different raster stuff. Like the other stuff that I can't teach Beth, she's already way better at it than with the coloring and the color theory and all that sort of stuff in terms of creating a mood with color. But thankfully, after 3 books together now, she's really good at InDesign and layout. And so when it comes time for her to put together her own first book, she'll be raring to go, you know, and that's a nice feeling in terms of just paying it forward as an artist.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like the mentorship part of it. You know, and frankly,
yeah, exactly.
I kind of, for the most part, I know what needs to be done in terms of social media and stuff. I can direct that as well. Here's the thing that is going to be pivotal for me. And I want to hear what you think about it, because I keep hearing you use the words, have them come in. And as you know, I'm a hermit, and already the idea of having an intern in my space for 6 hours every Wednesday, it kind of has me, it gives me the little bit of the heebie-jeebies. I know I'm going to get used to it and everything, but it's like not the best in terms of just my natural way of being. On the other hand, the idea of having it, as weird as this sounds, because man, when I was the employee, I always thought teleworking was the greatest answer, and how stupid managers were that they didn't want to trust an employee who wanted to work from home. Because it's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to do the work. You know, I'm not going to sit there and screw around, and you can certainly trust me. And now that I'm on the other side of that equation, and I'm like, well, maybe this person could just work from home. My immediate reaction is, no way am I going to pay this person cash money and trust them that they've been doing the work. I want them in here so I can see them working. You know, what are your thoughts? Would you ever hire somebody to work from home and just kind of check in on them regularly and see if they're doing the stuff they said they were going to do?
The immediate response is no, keep them in the studio. And I think that's frankly fair. I think that's probably true, especially for a college kid, that they're going to be like on Instagram 80% of the day anyway. So you might as well get them into the studio where you can make sure, like, hey, put your phone over there and let's get to work.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think that's, I also, the whole point of employment is to be able to turn on a dime. So if you suddenly need to switch gears, be like, all right, that Illustrator project I have you working on, let's have you switch gears and we're going to do some shipping or this or that. And it just makes your life so much easier when you can turn on a dime, you know?
Yeah.
And also you need to develop a rapport, and you can really only, teleworking doesn't create that. You need the personal touch of being in presence.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would recommend that. But I think you should write up your description, figure out what salary level you'd like, figure out, I'm assuming you want them to start part-time, yeah? That's probably the smarter way.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Like a couple hours a day, maybe 3 days a week would be pretty much what I would be looking for, you know, just to start out, to establish a baseline and then grow from there.
Yeah. And so then from there, what I would do is I would go talk to the illustration professors, the painting professors, the sculpting professors, see who was a really standout, good student. And kind of like we were talking about with kids, you want to hire the nerd, you know?
Yeah.
You want to hire the person that even on their own wants to do the job right, just because they have a sense of pride. And, you know, you already can intuit what you want in terms of personality. You don't want the big person in a small studio space, the big personality in a small studio space.
Right.
You want the quiet nerd who puts their head down and gets to work.
Exactly.
And so already just by talking to professors, you'll benefit from their insight, having worked with their students month in and month out. So I think that's the smart way to go. So good.
Yeah.
I think I'm excited for you to go down that path in 2019. I think it's going to be a learning curve, just so you know, and it's going to be weird. It's weird having someone else in your studio, but you will benefit from it, and they will benefit from it because you're a good cartoonist and a good teacher, and they will come out of it better on the other side.
Yeah, that part I do like the idea of mentoring somebody that I know I do a lot of, and you as well. We do a lot of online mentoring where we say, you know, here's some thoughts, you know, and we share a lot of information through this podcast and otherwise. But the idea of taking somebody on a 1-to-1 basis and really do that a lot more significantly is something that kind of appeals to me as well. So that's something I'm kind of looking forward to.
Yeah, and another reason, just to put a capstone on that thought about working physically in the space, is that you want them to come to care about your work, and in the same way that you want to come to care about their broader scope of their career and how you can help them.
Right.
I mean, not to make it sound cheesy, but ultimately, you want to be a good human in this and make their life better in the same way that they're making your life better. So working physically in the studio can make that happen in a more pleasant and productive way, I think. So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm excited for that. Good. Okay, good. So we've knocked down one of your 2019 goals.
Yes. Now, I want to hear something that you've got on tap for 2019.
Okay. So I'm going to try... Oh, boy. I don't know which one to tackle first. So we talked before that I've overscheduled Comic-Cons for this year. I've got five yes. of them coming down the pipe. And I'm going to be honest with you and with the world, that's a bad idea for all the other goals that I have for this year, because I have too many. But... anyway, so I've got five of them.
So now you've got five now, but does that include the NCS Fest?
Yes. So that's going to be the one in Huntington Beach, which is just down the road. And also WonderCon, which is just down the road. And San Diego Comic-Con, which is a bit of a hike, but it's also down the road. So three of them are in Southern California. So there's only two traveling shows. One is Emerald City Comic-Con, and one is an Alaskan comics retreat that I have blocked out on my schedule. Even though I haven't been accepted yet, we'll see if they accept me. But
right.
I have it blocked out on my schedule to go to Alaska, which I haven't been to in 25 years, so that'll be fun.
So now here's what I was getting at, though, in terms of, like, by saying, do you count NCS Fest? I'm doing that one, too, but I don't even really count that as a comic convention in that I don't think I'm even going to prepare for that the way I prepare for a comic convention. I'll probably bring a couple dozen of my most recent book, and that's about it. Maybe a banner stand, because I don't see, especially since this is their first time out, it's an outdoors type of thing. It's going to be a completely different atmosphere than a traditional comic convention.
Yeah.
And I don't expect that there's going to be a whole lot in terms of sales, unless I'm going to be pleasantly surprised. So I don't know that I count that so much as you're going to have time off that you're going to have to compensate for in your schedule in terms of getting work done. But in terms of like, oh, I've got to make sure I've got, 10 copies of this book and 10 copies of that book, and I've got to make sure I do this kind of marketing outreach. I don't know that I are you planning on doing this the way you would do a standard comic convention?
In general, I think yes is my broad question mark answer, that I'm going to do the show like I do a standard Comic-Con. But it'll be you there. It'll be me there. It'll be other Southern California cartoonists. You and I are probably going to record a couple of podcast episodes. We'll probably have a glass of wine at the end of each night. So it won't be like a standard Comic-Con, but it'll be close to a Comic-Con, question mark? I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so I mentioned the shows in general because I wanted to tell you that they do put an impedance on my other goals. And my two big goals for this year are two books. Years after finishing Stripped, I'm now kind of back on schedule. In the last 18 months, I put out three books.
Yeah.
And I want to keep that going for this year, which is every 6 months, a new book. And so my publishing schedule for this year is that I'm going to do a book that's entirely all the Sheldon pop culture strips.
Ooh.
That's the next one I'm going to do. And so I don't know if you remember, I did one that was all the coffee strips, one that was all the pug strips, one that was all the literature strips.
Yeah.
And those do really well. People like the themed collections.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do one that's just the pop culture strips. So that's all the Star Wars jokes, all the Lord of the Rings jokes, all the Star Trek jokes, all that kind of stuff in one comic book.
Are they going to be separated by category, like one chapter just Star Trek, another chapter just Star Wars, or are they going to be interspersed?
Well, this is actually a good point. I would love to hear your opinion. Without me telling you what I'm going to do, you tell me first, your first reaction, what should I do? Separate them out or intersperse them?
Separate them out. It appeals to me that there's just one thing that I can solidly get into a Star Wars mindset and just enjoy all of those. And then then you turn the page and it's a big splash pillow of Star Trek. And then I know I'm going to get solid Star Trek. Also, if I'm a fan, I can jump to exactly the one that I'm the biggest fan of.
This is why we're friends. Okay, good. So that's what I'm doing.
Yes.
That's my plan, is to separate them out.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to colorize them. So, and by me, I mean Beth is going to colorize
yes.
them. but we're gonna because there's a good decade there of pretty solid jokes where they weren't yet in color, and so we're gonna get them all to color. And I think we're gonna end up with something like 200 pages, 250 pages.
Oh, that's
so it'll
great.
Be a good solid book. And I think it'll be pretty. So that's going to be in the spring to come out at San Diego Comic-Con. And then in the fall for my Christmas release, I'm going to try something that I've never done before. Are you ready for this?
Because
I'm nervous about it. And I would love to get your advice. I'm going to do a children's book this fall.
Ooh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
Do you have the plot, the concept?
Yep. I got it all ready to go. It technically, it won't be hard to write or to do it, but emotionally, I will be honest that because it's new and it's so different, I'm not sure about it. I guess the word I'm looking for is anxious. I'm anxious about it.
No, this is fantastic, because I remember when we were talking during the last show when we did the 2018 wrap up, and you were talking about scheduling. And you said you like to put one thing on your schedule that scares you a little bit. And
that's true. I did say that, didn't I? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you were so smart when you said that.
I guess past me was right.
I
am scaring myself. Good.
And it sounds like this is your thing. This is the thing that scares you a little bit.
Well, you know, Brad, I've been doing cartooning for 20 years now publicly, you know, semi-professionally and then professionally. And you have to keep things new and interesting for yourself. You have to stir it up every once in a while. And so for me, a kid's book is so different that it seems to me a challenge. Like, you know, a lot of people come to us as cartoonists and be like, oh, I got a great idea for a children's book, because they think it's easy, but it's actually harder to do it well, to find of all the myriad words you could choose in the English language, to find the four or five that work for that page. You know, it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And to make that perfect marriage of guiding illustration and guiding words that bring a kid's eyes along to the next page. It's a lot harder than people think. And you look at like Mo Willems or you look at Dr. Seuss and you see how they do it. And you think, oh, well, that's easy. It's not easy. So I'm anxious about how to do it and do it well. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
So you're planning on kickstarting this?
Yes. And so here's another thing that I'm also nervous about.
Yeah.
Is that I have gotten used to a certain level of profit and a certain level of margins.
Yeah.
And just by nature of the fact that it's going to be whatever it is, a 32-page book, hardcover, full color. This is a very different margin and a very different gross for me as a product.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how it's going to go. I don't know. And I also don't know if people will back me. Do people want a kid's book from Dave Kellett? I have no idea. But I think they do. I hope they do, but maybe not. Maybe people are like, hey, good for you, Dave. Pat on the back. Not buying it, but good for you. I'm glad you did it.
There's always that chance. But having a table next to you for years and years, I think it's a pretty calculated risk. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to find that there's a very enthusiastic response to this. And in terms of emotion and financial backing. But now let's say, going down the road on this, you get it kickstarted, you've got the books. Would you approach like Scholastic saying, I've done this book and I can hand it over to you for further distribution? Or is this something that you just want to stay self-published and then put it into distro yourself?
I am under no illusions as to me approaching Scholastic and them being like, Dave Kellett, we've been waiting for you. Oh, we're so glad you're here. We had heard about this Kickstarter project and we're so glad you submitted. Yes, we're immediately greenlighting this. No, I'm under no illusions that it's not going to be picked up by any publisher.
You don't think?
No, I don't think
so.
With the
sight unseen, if you do a Kickstarter, it goes let's say you've got the numbers of the recent Pug book. And you bring that to a Scholastic and say, take a look at the level of success this has already have. I am willing to hand it over to you for distribution rights. They're not going to take that?
No, I don't think so.
Wow.
First of all, I'd have to get an agent. They don't want to deal with just me.
That's true.
So
I have heard
I'd have
that.
To go get an agent, which I don't want to do. And then the agent would want to change pages, which I won't want to do. And then with the change pages, they'll go to Scholastic, and then Scholastic will want to change pages, and they'll be like, wow, I don't want to do that either, but then I'll have to do that. And so, and then the money will not be that great, and I'll be like, why am I, you know, I wasn't making much money on this anyway, and now I'm jumping through a lot of hoops to do something that I... So anyway, so even if Scholastic were to pick it up, or one of the bigger ones would pick it up, it would be a lot of hoops, and it would be not a tremendous amount of money up front. And if I went with a smaller publisher, it would be a lot of hoops and an even smaller amount of money up front. And so I just want to do it. I just want to get it out in the world. I'll make a few 10,000 off of it, and that'll be that, you know?
That makes sense. So this is going to be a completely self-published venture.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not a dummy. I'll walk it around Comic-Con to different publishers and say, do you see any there? Like I've done with certain projects of mine. But the competition and the number of children's books that are being submitted every year, I'm under no illusions as to my chances. Because also, I have to be honest about it. This would be my first children's book. And who's to say it will turn out good? I'm not sure. I think it will be nice. But there are so many professionals out there working in this field. I don't want to come in here with an ego, because it's like you and I, we get those cartoonists at Comic-Con come up to me hey, how many years until I'm making what you're making? And you're like, well, right, a decade, right. You know? So this is my first kid's book. I don't want to walk into a room with Johnny Big Ego going, oh yeah, they're going to buy it right away, Brad. They don't realize how fantastic I am. Like, yeah. This will be the first kid's book I've ever done. It might take me 10 until I'm good, you know?
Right. So now I'm back in the Webcomics Weekly days. I remember you specifically sharing a little bit of advice on a new project where you said you never like to talk too much about a new project, because sometimes talking about a project replaces doing a project. Do you remember saying that?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, because the excitement gets drained away, you know?
Yes. And basically you use up all the excitement just saying, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then 3 months go past and it's like, oh, I haven't done anything. I've sat around and talked about it, but I haven't actually done anything. So yeah. With that being the case, how much do you want to tell us about this project? Because I'm fascinated. A Dave Kellett children's book sounds like it's the thing that I never knew I really, really wanted to read, you know?
Oh, Brad, well, let's light the fire and get some Chablis out and I'll read it to you. How's that? No.
Do you have what's the concept? What's the subject? How much do you want to share with us?
So it's going to be a standard size kid's book. And by that, I know it's been a while since you've bought a kid book, since your kids are up till 4:30 in the morning. But it's going to be a standard size kid's book, but really quality paper and really nice color printing. As if you've talked to parents of young kids, you know that there is a difference between the so-so kids book that was produced and the beautifully done kids book that was produced. Yeah. And I want this one to be a beautifully done kids book, really nice paper, maybe a foil stamp on the cover, really soft quality paper that absorbs colors in a beautiful way. And it's going to be a hardcover bound, slim volume, because it's a kids book, probably with a slip cover, but with a nice secondary cover inside. It's going to be a standard kids length. And then it's going to be based off of a comic I did that has had a huge response both on my site and on social media.
Is it Your Life Is a Line?
Your Life Is a Line, yeah.
Yes! I'm already here for it.
Oh, good. So you know the one I'm talking about.
Yes.
This comic, I have had huge emails written to me about this one comic, and it has, by hook or by crook, you know, you do 20 years worth of comics, and every once in a while you get one that really resonates with people, and people really love this comic, and they invest a lot emotionally into it that's maybe not even in the comic itself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I realized that there is a there, and so I can absolutely mine this comic for 10 to 15 more pages. And make it very beautiful and very sweet. And frankly, it's going to talk about love and loss and owning your own future. And I think it'll be a nice little arc for a young kid, you know?
This sounds great. You sure you don't want to move this one up and do it first so we can see it sooner?
I appreciate that support, my friend. But no, it's going to be... So the good thing... The good thing about the because I want to touch back on your reminding me of my own point about talking about a project versus doing the project.
Yeah.
So I will talk about it here, but I probably won't talk about it much more after this in terms of our 2019 resolutions. It's basically just to mention it to you here, and then I already have it on my production schedule, so I have to do it. Like it'll be a bummer if I don't. Something will have gone wrong if I don't do it. But I don't think it will be that hard to draw. And it will be kind of fun to draw something different. Now, where this fails my traditional model too is that, so I already said that the margins are and the overall gross per book are not going to be as great as I've come to expect with my big fat soft covers and my big drive hardcovers, right?
Yeah.
But another way this fails my model is you and I are big proponents on draw something once, get paid for it multiple ways.
Yes, yes.
And this is going to be the first project that I've had in a long, long time that I can only get paid one way for it.
Right.
I can't run this on Sheldon and then make a book out of it, I don't think.
No.
So I've got to, it's got to just be on the Kickstarter, and then maybe I can sell the pages as original art. So I'll make money that way. But it's going to be a unique use of my time that only gets that only brings in profit one way, and so I'm a little anxious about that too. But sometimes you got to mix it up. I mean, I did that with Stripped. Stripped only had one way of making money, and it took 4 years to make it. So sometimes there are projects like that, you know, that just that require the time and can only be sold one way.
Yeah, that sounds. And I you are right. That does put a little bit of trepidation in there. Because I can't even, I mean, you can add this as a digital add-on to your next Kickstarter, but in terms of just releasing this as a digital edition, it's not going to generate that much, I don't think, because that's just not, I don't know that the market is that big for that.
Right. And now, without knowing anything else, let me just ask you one thing, just out off the cuff. What do you think is a Kickstarterable price for a kid's book?
Ooh, boy, oh boy. That's a good, because I haven't bought a kid's book.
Not knowing anything else, just gut reaction. What is a price that's too low? What is a price that's too high? What's just right?
I'm gonna price that at that. I'm gonna go with my default and say $19.99. Put it in the $20 range.
$20 range. Okay. All right.
Because it's 35 pages, but I haven't picked up a kid's book in a long time. So 25 maybe, but for a kid's book, yeah. Yep. My gut with no research, you know, so it's just, you know, talking out of my hindquarters here, $19.99. Because here's the deal. You got to think, how is this thing going to be bought? And certainly it's going to be bought by a parent who wants to read it to their kid. But even more so, it's going to be bought as a birthday present or a Christmas. It's going to be bought to be gifted. Right?
Gifted. Yep.
And so you're looking for something, and of course you're going to buy little Jimmy, you know, the latest toy of the month and everything. But you're invited to a birthday party, and you want to be the cool aunt, you want to be the cool uncle that gives something that's just a little bit more meaningful than that. You're going to look for something to slide in with that robot. You know, you're going to look for something to slide in with that video game that is uniquely Uncle Myron, and that is something that you're willing to do, you want to do, but you don't want to do it much more than $20 worth. Because let's face it, you're going to be Uncle Myron next year too, and the year after that, and the year after that. So in terms of a gift that's something special and something extra, I'm saying $20. Now, I know you've researched this. What's the answer you came to?
No, I think emotionally, this is separate from my research. I think emotionally you're right. I can't go above $20. And where that gets a little painful is that a full color hardcover book that looks beautiful is going to cost me somewhere in the 4 to 5, maybe slightly north of 5 range for cost of goods sold. And so that's going to be about 4 times cost for the pricing. And normally, as people know, I like to price 5 times cost. For all of the reasons that we've talked about, whether I ever wholesale it, whether I have to pay for damaged product down the line, whether I have, you know, you need that built-in profit margin, not because you're greedy, but because you need to make a living for in and among all the other ways that book can lose you money down the road, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So 4 times cost is okay. I can make that work. It's just, it's not bringing in a ton of money. But for the ability and the chance to try something new and different, I think it's worth it. I think it's fun. I think it's mm-hmm. fun to try. I will be happy to have done it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. It'll be something nice to have out on your table when you do comic conventions. That's a little bit different. And I know you like having that sort of thing displayed prominently, where it's going to bring in the person that wouldn't normally be stopping at your table.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's going to be, I mean, maybe we will talk about this in the fall as we get closer and I get some technical questions for you to share publicly. But for the most part, I think it will be, in general, I'm just excited to do it as something that's very different for a very different market, very different audience, priced very differently than I normally would price it, created in a way that's very different from my other get paid for it many ways comics. And so there's a lot of different aspects about this that are quote unquote new. And for that reason, I'm excited to do it. So anyway, that's my big book challenge for this year.
Oh, that sounds so great.
Listen, I'm seeing a red light blinking on my dashboard here that we've got a guest coming in. Are you ready to chat NCS Fest for a second, my friend?
Yes, we've got company. This is so cool.
Well, let's welcome him in. Well, Brad, speaking of shows for 2019, let's talk about a new show that I'm super excited about. This is the National Cartoonist Society NCS Fest in Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
I know you're familiar with it, Brad, because you're coming. The two of us are coming.
Wild horses couldn't keep me away.
Wild horses, what a reference. All right. Well, listen, here to talk with us about it, we have the two-time past president of the National Cartoonist Society and the current president of the NCS's charity arm, and that's the NCS Foundation. This is Steve McGarry. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Hello, chaps. Yes, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks so much for coming on to talk about the show. For those not familiar with Steve's work, first of all, I should say, I want to direct you to stevemcgarry.com, and that's McGarry with an M-C, not an M-A-C, stevemcgarry.com. Steve is one of the best portraiture and caricature cartoonists in the world.
Yeah.
And if you can get him to talk comics over beer, it's one of the best hour to 2 hours of your life. So I highly recommend you cornering him at a Comic-Con and buying him a beer. How's that, Steve? How's that for an intro? Buy him a beer.
I mean, that works for me. But I was going to say, if it's a two-hour session, that's quite a short session by our standards, isn't it?
That's right. That only gets you 8, maybe 10 pints tops. That's not very much. Yeah. So that's... Well, and as you can hear from the accent, Steve is an Iowa boy, born and bred.
That's right. Yeah.
He grew up in Des Moines. What was a Des Moines childhood like in Iowa there, Steve?
Strange, because it looked a lot like the north of England.
They say that a lot about Iowa. Yeah. It's got that continental
That's
flair.
Iowa and Manchester virtually identical in look and lifestyle.
Yeah, it was in those days. It's changed a lot since then.
Now it's Starbucks everywhere. And, it's lost the charm.
Now it feels strangely American now.
Well, all right, so let's get in on this. So for those that aren't familiar, for cartoonists that are not familiar with it around the world, what is the NCS, the National Cartoonist Society?
Basically, it was formed in 1946, and it was mainly the New York-based strip cartoonists got together during the war to draw for the troops, and they had a really good time hanging out with each other and drinking and carousing. So they figured, well, let's have a society dedicated to drinking and carousing. And so we like to say that it's the world's premier organization of professional cartoonists. And it used to be that it was very, very hard to get into the NCS in the early years. And when you were accepted for membership, it was kind of like a validation of your status.
Mm-hmm.
If you were admitted to the NCS, then you'd arrived. And pretty much every major American cartoonist you can think of from the 20th century was an NCS member. Eisner and Kniff and Herblock and all those great names, Sparky, Jeff McNally.
Well, so let me ask you this, though, because I know the NCS over the years, especially since it started during the war, does a lot of stuff with the USO. It does a lot with children's hospitals. It does a lot with visiting and outreach. But it's never hosted a festival. So tell me the genesis. Tell Brad and I, if you don't mind, the genesis of the NCS Fest and why the pivot towards the festival and what the goals are.
Part of our remit is not just to sort of to be a society where we can sort of slap each other's backs and give each other rewards. Part of it, our remit is to use our talents to promote the art form, to encourage aspiring cartoonists and emerging cartoonists, and use our talents and our wisdom to help, you know, people with emerging careers.
Right,
so that's
right.
Always been a big part of it that I don't think people quite understood. And so for many years, we've done the Reuben Awards. The Reuben Awards are kind of like the, we, you know, like to think of it as the Oscars of cartooning to a great extent. Pretty much every, you know, luminary in the cartooning profession has won the Reuben at some point.
No, well, no, Steve, I haven't won one yet. It's a small, no, small no. mistake there. Small mistake there, Steve.
Just, almost everyone. little asterisk there.
Yeah, that's just a small hiccup, I'm sure, is what's happened.
Well, that brings us to why it's important that we change the society, because there's obviously been a... you've obviously been overlooked, Dave, and this needs to be remedied. Yeah. Anyway, so vanity aside, I've not won one either. But we've both won division awards, haven't we, Dave?
You've we do, division, yeah. Mine actually sits above my desk. So, yes, we both have won.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes, I've got mine, and it's alongside my silver T-square.
He won up me, Brad. See what he did there? Very nice. Nicely done, Steve.
Yes, well played, sir. Yeah.
You do enjoy having this little conversation.
Oh, yeah.
you just let me know when we're back to something I can...
So, Steve, Brad glances over at his desk and sees a 2-inch tall participant trophy from soccer and just goes, yep, I'm polishing up my trophies too, you know.
The closest I got is one of those glasses that, you remember those glasses that they would print the comics characters on? You know, those tumblers?
Like at Burger King?
Yeah. I've got one with Stan Lee's face on it. And I'm very and I'm very proud of my Stanley Cup.
That I did not see that setup coming, you son of a bitch. No. That's a terrible joke.
Of course, if all the gags take that long to set up, how long is this podcast?
Yeah, Steve, you're very new to this show, I'm afraid. Steve, it only gets worse from here on in.
Okay.
Brad, you could just hear Steve and I sipping water as you're still setting up that joke. All right. Well, so tell us, but before we go too long on that joke, so tell us about the structure of the NCS Fest. So it's going to be in Huntington Beach, California, which is, frankly, having grown up in Southern California, it's one of the prettiest beach coastal towns in Southern California. It has a gorgeous pier that it's famous for. And the show is going to be outside, right? But it's also going to take advantage of the city itself.
Yeah. Well, just to sort of finish off that point about the Reubens, was that for all these years, we would take the Reubens to a different city every year.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we would bring in 300 or 400, you know, very famous cartoonists to come and hang out at the Reuben weekend. But it was a private event, and it seemed such a waste. And so we would do things like in Memphis, for instance, we did a huge fundraiser for St. Jude. And in 2 days, we raised $100,000 for St. Jude.
That's great.
And so we would do that wherever we go. And every city we go to, we do a mass signing, not only in conjunction with the paper, you know, because most of the cartoon strips, the creators of those are NCS members. So we would do something with the local paper, do a big signing, and everybody enjoys it. So that was part of the idea, was, we enjoy the outreach as much as getting together. So we thought, well, how can we expand on that? In the last few years, the foundation has developed a big presence at San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con and Comic-Cons all around the country. But as you know, a Comic-Con and a festival, they're completely different animals. And so what we wanted to do was to emulate the idea of the festivals that you see in Angoulême in France or Lucca in Italy, and just do a big free festival where everybody's welcome. You know, the vast majority of the program is free. Mm-hmm. And it's just a way of, one, involving more cartoonists because we're inviting everybody to come and, you know, hang out, table with us, come to the events if they wish. It's a great chance to network, maybe promote your business. But also we figured, well, this is a perfect opportunity to just get hundreds of thousands of of members of the public to come and see what we do, learn more about cartoons and cartooning from all over the world. Basically, we'll put some big names there in the tent for free. There'll be exhibitors there. There'll be some retailers there. Then the city's across the street from the pier, the city's closing down three blocks of Main Street, and we're putting gazebos up all along both sides of Main Street.
That
will be our artist's alley. Mm-hmm. And then at the other end of the pier then, so three blocks of Main Street is artist's alley. And then we're taking over the art center and the library. And in the other room will be one-hour cartooning classes with basically the world's most famous cartoonists, and families can come. It's kind of first come, first served there. And you can spend an hour learning to draw The Simpsons with David Silverman, or The Walking Dead with Charlie Adlard, or, just everybody will be in there. Sergio Aragonés will do a class, Tom Richmond will do a class. And then our HQ will be the Hyatt Regency, which is about three blocks away from the pier. And there will be, we've got three ballrooms of programming on the go, and that's where all the sort of the industry seminars and how-to classes and big interviews.
Yeah, yeah.
There'll also be we do a lot of live art shows. But it just means that we can involve more and more and more cartoonists,
yeah, yeah,
and give them a showcase and give them a spotlight. Because I'm a big believer that that it's a lot more attractive to appear at an event than to just attend an event.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so we want to spotlight as many cartoonists as we can and give them a platform and just allow them to, one, to sort of interact with their peers and, meet cartoonists from all over the world. But two, more importantly, promote their business, because in the end, we're all professionals. This is what we need to do.
Well, on that note, before we close it out, I want to direct everyone to ncsfest.com. And as I said, Brad and I will be exhibiting there. Steve will be exhibiting there. But Steve, what's the deadline for turning in for tabling and for exhibiting at NCS Fest? Is it mid-January?
No, it's we've extended that to the end of January. And to be honest with you, as long as we've got spaces, we're happy to take applications. But I would urge people, if you're going to sign up, because this thing's, if you've only got to look at the guest list, Charlie Adlard, we've got Daniel Close, we've got
the Hernandez brothers, Kathy Geiswaite.
Penelope Bagu. Penelope alone is probably, I think she's got about a million followers on social media. These are massive stars we're bringing in. And the guest list is growing and growing and growing, because pretty much 99% of people we talk to, as soon as we tell them about this, they're really keen to get involved. There is nothing like this.
We're excited for it. It's going to be the very fact that it's free and the very fact that it's open to the public. And so all the cash is still in their wallet when they come to see you as a cartoonist. That's so different than an American Comic Con, where they've already had to pay and wait in line and do all this and, with the tickets. And so it's going to make a very different feeling show. And you're going to get very different kinds of people walking up that are like, oh, comics. I haven't thought about comics in a decade or two. And so it's going to be kind of a fun thing to see on the streets of America, a European-style festival.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we're stressing the festival aspect of this.
And once again, it's ncsfest.com. The Artist Alley tabling applications are up, as Steve said, till the end of January. But if there's availability, they'll still go beyond that. And the show is shaping up to be really something special. So if you're in Southern California or a drivable Western state, I couldn't recommend it enough. I think it'll be super fun. Once again, Steve McGarry of stevemcgarry.com. Thank you so much, Steve, for coming by, and we're looking forward to the show.
Oh, no, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, Brad, let's now that we've talked about the NCS Fest, we already know that you and I are doing that show.
Oh yeah, and now I'm more hyped than ever for what is it, May, to get here and get down there for that thing. I am super hyped.
I'm most excited for Sleepover Party with Brad Geiger. That's what I'm most excited for. We're gonna stay up all night braiding hair, telling ghost stories. It's gonna be great. So now that we know that you're doing a show this year, is a big switch, by the way, for Brad Geiger from the last 2 years. So what is another goal you have for 2019?
Well,
what's another big swing that you have?
I've got two more goals. One of them, there's not much to talk about because it's just it's something that we've already talked about quite a bit. And that is my goal is to publish three books this year. And the only thing I really need to note is that that's been my goal for the last 2 years, and I failed it for the last 2 years. And it's just a matter of doing better planning and also being successful with that first goal of hiring an assistant.
Right.
Because I think that's going to clear up some of my time that I can use to concentrate on that. But the goal for publishing is to do the next After Dark book, to do a second edition of the Webcomics Handbook, which is very, there's a lot of new stuff that I can be putting into that. In fact, there's two chapters that I am very, very close to just taking out entirely because of how unimportant they are. And one of them is advertising, and the other I'm very, very strongly leaning towards getting rid of the comic convention chapter or putting a note in there saying, if you want information on this, you can still find the first edition, you know, go get it.
I like the bitter author. If you want information on this, go away. Go somewhere else.
Well, you can still find that first edition or like webcomics.com, but I don't know that it justifies taking up that much space in the book. And comic conventions used to take up a lot of space in the book.
I know. I just like that attitude, though. So hi, everybody. Brad Geiger chiming in. If you'd like some information on Comic-Con, go eat rocks. Go pound sand.
You're an idiot. Go home and tell your mom she raised an idiot.
Go run to mama and tell her she raised a dummy. You're a dummy. All right. So an Evil Inc. After Dark book, an update of the webcomics book. What's the third one that you want to do?
Well, the third one is probably going to be like the next Evil Inc. Book, like the next Evil Inc. graphic novel, because that'll put us right at the end of the year, and I'll have enough stuff to do the next graphic novel with any luck. So that's really kind of where I'm headed at this point. But there's not a whole lot to talk about there other than I just got to do it.
Well, there is a lot to talk about.
Okay.
As your friend, I want to talk you through this because Brad, come on. Three in a year?
Well,
you're not going to do three. Come on.
Listen, I didn't do three last year and I didn't do three the year before. So are you saying it would be better? Because really, I did the Evil Inc. book, the Evil Inc. graphic novel in 2018. So right. I can skip a year with that because basically I could go Evil Inc., After Dark, Evil Inc., After Dark, and go back and forth between those easily. So I can take that one off my list and do like a first part of the year, second part of the year, which actually might be more doable, frankly.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of what we should always do as friends is keep each other lovingly accountable and accounted. I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you say three a year. You know how hard that is to do three books in 1 year. You know it. That's not going to happen.
Listening to it back, I'm like, yeah, you do know that, and that's ridiculous. And two is going to be
hard
much
enough.
More doable.
Yeah, but hard. Two is hard. So don't just three. Okay, so let's narrow it down. Do you want to narrow it down by what emotionally you'd like to get out, or which one will make you more money? Which one would you like to weed out?
The one. Well, for both reasons, the Evil Inc. graphic novel is gonna be number three on my list of priorities. The After Dark book is gonna be number one. Webcomics Handbook is a close number two because I know that there's going to be a big pent-up demand, and I think it's going to be a strong book. Probably in terms of financial success and emotional need, the Evil Inc. graphic novel, since I just did one last year, is low on both of those.
Yeah, okay. So I think can we gently put that one aside for 2019 we're just going to do two?
You've already talked me into it.
Good. Good.
It's out. And plus, it's just so much. I mean, I'm kind of relieved already because three is a lot. But two, you do one in the beginning of the year, and then you launched one in the summer. And it just makes so much more logical sense. It's so much more doable.
Oh, it's so much more doable. And for me, the reason why I do 2 a year is, one, I always try to have launched and ready for Comic-Con, which obviously doesn't impact you. But because if you have it ready at Comic-Con, honest to God, it's another $2,000 or $3,000 of sales at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And sometimes if it's a good book, more than that. So it's worth having it at Comic-Con. And then the other one is have it ready for Christmas sales by early November, because that itself is another couple thousand of sales for people that gift it. You know, like they've already gotten their Evil Ink for themselves. Now they're going to gift one. And so you get a second sale out of it.
Right.
So that's okay. So good. So we're down to two books. Now, I think the webcomics book, that's especially with an assistant, that's some good low hanging fruit that you can definitely crank out.
Yep.
The Evil Ink book, or the After Dark book, is that's how much would you say percentage wise is already drawn?
100%.
Oh, this is great. This is music to my ears. So once you've got an assistant up and running for about 3 or 4 months, what you can do is you take a full work day and you just sit with them on InDesign and you show them how to lay out stuff.
Yeah.
And then you're so good at InDesign. Now, I know you're going to be like, but I could lay it out in 10 minutes. No, you get to drawing and you let them lay it out. And then you go back and check it. And oh, Brad, we can have this book out so fast. This is great.
Yeah.
This is great.
Well, that's so the After Dark is going to be the first one, no matter what, because it's just going to be the easiest one to crank out, and right. It's going to set if it goes the way the last one went, you know, knock on wood, then it's going to set me in good position. Jeez, I do that stuff even when I'm not trying to do it. but it'll set me into a good position for the rest of the year. So that's kind of that's the boss in terms of publishing, and it'll let me do the webcomics handbook in the time I need to do it, because I'm going to have that intern here for the next 3 months. Well, we're not going to be ready to publish in the first half of the year at that schedule. But if I have that book set up, and then the other thing I want to really do with this book, and there's a way to do it in InDesign, but it was too time intensive for me to do it myself with the first webcomics handbook, and that is to set up an index in the back where you say, you know, you flip to the index and you say, okay, where does he talk about PDFs? Oh, page 57, page 87 through 93, you know, that kind of thing. You can do that in InDesign, and it's very doable. It's labor intensive, though. So perfect thing for an intern.
right.
You know, so there's stuff like that. But that'll position me to have that book out on the second publishing swing, because that's going to be a little bit more labor intensive.
Right. OK, so I think that's smart. I'm excited for you now, because two books that are frankly have a big chunks of them already done is great. That's a great sign for your 2018 or 2019.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to tell you one other thing, too. Having just kickstarted the Drive 2 book, here's some fun news for you, for your Kickstarter, is that you now have the opportunity not just to sell the second After Dark book, but you're going to sell the 1-2 pack in that Kickstarter. And, oh, chef's kiss, that's the best thing, because you get a lot of people jumping in on a one-time shipping cost, and they're getting two books. And it's great. You're going to love that. It's going to be just an extra 1,000 or 2 of just that. So that's great.
Oh, and don't forget, what's probably going to happen with that first After Dark book is the same thing that happened with the thing that's going to happen with the second After Dark is that with the first After Dark, I actually put out 3 books. There was the Courting Disaster Collection and the Commissions Comic. So there's actually 3 that they can knock on, and I'll probably do something similar in the After Dark swing, where I've got a couple ideas of what I can do that might be kind of fun. So there's a big knock-on sales effect that is going to happen with that first Kickstarter.
Right.
Yeah.
So another thing that I want to warn you about as a friend is the intern in your studio, or in any way involved in your studio.
Yeah.
Because this has become a big issue in labor laws in the last few years, and with good reason, because some Fortune 500 companies have taken really big advantage of internships. So you have to be careful with an internship that you are complying with labor laws, because most often now, like 90% of the time, interns are supposed to be paid legally.
Yeah.
Because frankly, there was a lot of abuse of internships by big companies. So I just want you to be careful with it, that make sure that they're getting either school credit, that they're aware that it's unpaid, that they're, you're not deriving any benefit from their internship, and either by, you know, physical work getting done or anything like that.
Yeah.
So just take a quick half day to make sure that you're in compliance with all that, because internship, the labor laws are rightfully protective of what can be done there.
No, that you're absolutely right. And so I put this internship together through the university that I'm getting the intern at.
Uh-huh.
So she's going to be getting college credit for it. They set up, you know, what the requirements are and so forth. And then I'm going to plan to not only give her the appropriate credit in the book, but when the Kickstarter goes through, I'll make sure that there's money built into that so I can pay her for the time that she did on it as well. So that's just going to be built right into the Kickstarter. Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. I figured you knew this already anyway. Yeah. I mainly because there are cartoonists out there, and it's not you, but there are cartoonists that are like, intern, I'm going to use them and you know, all that.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's not what the internship is for. So I'm so glad. I just wanted to mention that mainly for the public use, which is that, an internship is not a path to a free employee. It's for their benefit and for you to help train their future, is really the goal there.
No, and I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because there is a lot of abuse out there for interns.
Yeah. And Brad, who is your personality, frankly, is such a big part of it, is training the next generation of cartoonists, that I'm excited that you're doing an intern. But for other people out there with far lower scruples, an internship is not an unpaid employee. And so got to be careful about that.
Absolutely.
But between the paid employee that you will have, though, and an intern, though, your studio is going to go from 1 to 3 people, which is a big change.
I'm going to have to do some rearranging. I'm already planning a trip to IKEA, because I'm going to need to get another desk in here and another chair. And
you're going to have to start showering. This is a big change.
Yeah. That part I'm not looking forward to at all. You know, that,
God.
The part where I just come in here in my pajama bottoms and start working, you know, is long gone. But I'm going to have to get used to it. You know, put my big boy pants on, or any pants.
I'm excited, though, for your 2019. This is a good year ahead of you for what you got coming.
Yeah, I'm. Well, I mean, this whole thing is my something that scares you. You know, the whole idea of working with other people and delegating like that. I've done it once and had a very good experience, but that's definitely something that has me a little bit nervous.
Right. Well, for me, every year, remember I told you before that I was making my plans for 2019 with Beth, and at one point she just kind of stopped me and she's like, you cannot do all of this. You can stop planning. You can't do, you won't, you're going to setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
And that's why I was glad to have that discussion about 3 books with you, because I have all these plans of other things that I want to do that I'm not mentioning on the show.
Yeah.
There is a comics related TV show that I want to do with Fred Schroeder, my friend and co-director on Stripped.
Really?
That's a whole big project. I don't know that I'll ever have time for that in this coming year. Mm-hmm. There is a book club that I want to do with Dylan McConus. I don't know if I'm going to have time to do that with her. It's a podcast book club. And I don't know that I'll have time to do that with her. There's like 3 other projects that are small. There's a fun quick starter I want to do with you around Comic Lab that I think we may find time between the two of us to do it.
I'd like. I know what you're talking about, and I think it would be really cool.
You do. You yeah. I think it'd be fun too. For those that don't know, quick starters are like Kickstarters, but they only go for like 7 days, and they're really, you know, crank them out kind of thing. So Brad and I might do one around Comic Lab. Long story short, though, Brad, I have all these other plans for 2019 that, like, I don't know how to classify them, because if I don't start working them in, it's not like my years in the future suddenly have a whole month that are free, you know?
Well, yes and no. I'm going to bring you right to the beginning of the show, and I'm going to remind you that as your kids get older, you're going to have more time on your hands, just naturally. They're going to start doing things on their own. They're not going to need as much supervision. And you are going to find yourself with more usable hours in a few years.
Well, the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. I hear you, Brad. No, you're probably right. I get some of my time back, don't I?
Yeah. So I wouldn't feel too upset about putting a couple of those ideas on the shelf, because it's going to happen sooner than you think. Your kids, they're going to get old right in front of your eyes, you know, and it's going to start to loosen up a little bit. They're going to start sleeping in, they're going to start doing stuff on their own. And, you're going to get an hour here and an hour there, and it's going to start to build.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. Well, that actually informs the conversation we're going to have down the line, which is our 3-year plans and our 5-year plans.
Yes.
Because I think you and I, knowing and liking and loving the other one, will be able to course correct where our 3- and 5-year plan should go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no, I might say to you, Brad, I want to do 2 more movies, and you're going to take me by the shoulders and be like, David, sit down for a minute. You're not even going to do 1 movie in 4 years. Come on, let's just... I'm excited. I still want to do that. I want to challenge us to do those 3- and 5-year plans, because I think it'll be good for people to see what it's like when a cartoonist really plans out a bigger arc for their career. Because it is, frankly, and I say this to you as a friend, it's time for you to start reaching bigger and higher. And maybe it's time for me to start reaching bigger, higher. And so a 3-year plan is great for that, because it's a North Star that, even though you're not reaching it this year, it's like, no, I could be doing 3 books a year, or I could have 2 employees, or I could, you know what I mean? All that sort of stuff.
Right. No, it's a conversation that scares the hell out of me, but I think it's going to be for that very reason. I think it's the reason I should do it. I've been avoiding it. I've been completely avoiding it. So you're going to have to drag me kicking and screaming, but I'm going to thank you for it.
Have you been avoiding it? I don't.
Oh, yeah. I hoped you were going to forget about it.
Well, we keep getting emails from people being like, hey, when are you going to do your 3- and 5-year plan?
I know. And I want you to know, when I see those emails, it's like, shut up. You're going to remind him.
So Brad and I have a shared email for Comic Lab, and it's making me laugh that Brad might be deleting those emails. Like, oh, God, I hope Dave hasn't checked this yet. Oh, delete.
That was the first thing somebody said when we were trying to do our hang time this past week. And I'm like, shush. Don't bring up the damn 3-year plan. And knowing me as I do, you know how you get to know yourself after a couple of years?
Sure.
That tells me that it's something I really need to do. You know, when I start putting stuff off, that's when it's like, oh, that's something you really need to do. You know, you've been putting off that trip to the doctor. Yeah, that means you really need to go to the doctor. You know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. I need to do it.
So I'm glad to see that you put me in the same category as a prostate exam. That's great, Brad. Yeah.
Well, I turned 50 in April, and you know what that means. That means that I'm up for my first colonoscopy. We'll be talking
Blue
about
River.
That on this show, too. be a cold open that that'll have people turning the show off.
That's a very different cold open. Yeah.
Yes.
But I'm excited to do it, because I'm curious to see what challenges you would put down, what markers you would put down for me as like, what would represent 3 years worth of growth for Dave Kellett in Brad's eyes? What would represent 5 years worth of growth in Brad's eyes? Like, I think that'll be fun to do. For me, my immediate thought, without doing any thinking about it, is we got to start talking about the After Dark really large hardcover graphic novel collection. The 300 pager that you've got in the 5-year future of you, you know?
Yeah, that I would enjoy a lot.
Yeah, I think that would come up. Anyway, we'll save that for a future day. And I want you guys to keep us to hold our toes to the fire on this.
No,
keep
don't.
Emailing Brad being like, when are you guys doing the 3- to 5-year
no,
goal
don't.
Show? Don't let him worm out of this.
Don't listen to him.
Don't.
Oh, God. I'm breaking into, you know how I typically like making you blush by making off color remarks. Yeah, this is the equivalent on the other side of the microphone. Oh,
so all
I'm
I
sweating.
Need to do to make you blanch is just be the ghost of Christmas future, basically.
Yes. Yes, basically. Just point me towards the grave.
But that's the thing, though. Like, I mean, one of the things that I love about the Alexander Hamilton lyrics is that thing that, like, why do you write like you're running out of time?
Yeah.
And part of these kind of plans of the 1-year plans, 3-year plans, 5-year plans is that we don't have long on this earth. And
yeah,
my God,
right.
make it count, you know, like, hold yourself to account for the time that you have, and make ambitious plans, because your time is short.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Okay. We're putting it back on the schedule.
Like, we only have about 20, maybe 30 more years of productive cartooning in our career.
Yeah. Right. Or 20 or 30 good years. You know, including years, you know, when the stroke happens or, you know, you get hit by a car and your right arm is mangled and all those other nightmares that people like us have all the time. You know, just have a 20 that you can kind of count on without a major calamity.
Right. And so for me, the goal of 3-year, 5-year, 10-year planning is maybe when you reach your grave, you will have said, it's fine that my goal was to just be a cartoonist for 50 years. That's okay. Yeah. But as long as you don't get to the end of your days and go, oh, I wish I would have blank, you know?
Right.
And so part of the long-term planning is that there's not some big pie-in-the-sky goal that Dave Kellett or Brad Geiger or you listening have that you're not going to reach because you never planned for it.
Yeah.
And some of these goals, you have to elucidate them. You have to write them down. You have to make your mark and post it above your desk or else you'll never shoot for it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know why I'm going on and on about this, but I think the 3- and 5-year and maybe 10-year planning will be really good for us.
I'm getting a little bit excited about it.
That was so hesitant. I'm getting a little bit excited about it. No, this sounds fun to me.
No, really, doctor. Go ahead and drill the tooth. I think I'm ready.
just see Brad's foot.
That Novocaine is probably going to be pretty much close to 100%. Go ahead and drill.
I like the idea, though, of nervous Brad trying to sound excited. No, I'm excited to do this. This sounds like fun to me.
This is good. This is good. I like this. This will be, yeah. Yeah, this will be great.
Can you do that in your dopey dog voice that you do sometimes?
I'm very, very excited about this.
That kills me. Well, Brad, I think that about puts a button on the show. We had a good talk about 2019. We had a good talk about NCS with Steve McGarry. And now it's time to think in the anxious weeks ahead about our 3- and 5- and 10-year plans.
Exactly. So it's up to me to do my traditional, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and in this new year, making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been flop-sweating about the future, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And dragging his friend, kicking and screaming, Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song, which is currently masking Brad's nervous burping, is used with permission from Andy Creighton at the World... I don't know where that joke came from. At theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by the delightful Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab, so we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab.
What is nervous burping?
I don't know, but it's beautiful poetry.